Fantasy Connoisseurs Podcast. I'm Eddie Wasserman. Thank you guys for joining us for our Week 10 Fantasy Football Tuesday episode. I'm joined here, as always, by Colin Kapoor. Colin, how are you today?
Doing good. We got a W in the books last week, so we're back in the win column. Looking forward to Week 10. It's time to prepare for the playoffs. If you're a playoff bound team, it's time to look at those strength of schedules and make some deals based on that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're getting to the very late part of the season here, where all of a sudden we start to look at how the forecast looks for the next 5 or 6 weeks, and then translates in a couple of different ways. Of course, we're looking to their Week 14 through 16, and now Week 17 schedules after the addition of the 18th week this year. But that also means the waiver wire starts to really thin out at this point of the season, as pretty much anything that has any reasonable strength left has kind of been plucked off then. So we'll kind of get to that later in the episode, but the waiver wire is definitely looking a little weaker than it was earlier in the season, when there's still a lot of new things and things we're figuring out about teams. Now things are more defined.
Yeah, absolutely, and it comes down to, it's interesting, like, the debate over when you should spend your fab dollars. Should you be saving them for late in the season? But, you know, in fantasy football, if you see a guy you need to spend money on, got to do it. You can't worry about the future just because, like a guy like, I don't know, an Elijah Mitchell or someone like that, who, you know, maybe didn't look like he was worth all that money. He's coming into his own now. He got 5 receptions last week, so it's worth spending money. Now the waiver wire is so thin, you know, you might not be able to find those guys that you really need to augment your team.
Yeah, for sure. So what we're going to start out first with is some winners and losers of this week. We're going to start here with James Conner. Now, James Conner puts up 40 fantasy points this week in what was just a stunning performance. Now, we need to provide some context here, right? Chase Edmonds exits the game early with an injury, and Colt McCoy's the starter. So, A, Arizona's leading more in the run game. B, James Conner's the only guy there. But even that being said, his performance was the best we've seen of any Arizona running back this year. Not just in, of course, he was getting the volume, but his production on a per-carry basis was just awesome. He was electric.
So Edmonds has a high ankle sprain. He's going to be out for 3 to 4 games. There's an MRI on Monday that confirmed the high ankle sprain, and so he's going to be probably placed on IR. So James Conner's the guy going forward. And also, Kyler Murray's status is uncertain for Week 10. Cliff Kingsbury said on Monday that he doesn't have a feel for it yet, and so he's not committing to Kyler starting against Carolina. So Conner's going to be the guy. You know, you'll have some Eno Benjamin thrown in there. He got 9 carries for 39 yards and a touchdown in the game against San Francisco. But, I mean, Conner receives 26 touches, has 3 touchdowns, over 170 yards. So we've seen this in his days with Pittsburgh, where he can take over a game and be the leader of a backfield. I mean, he's had a nose for the end zone the entire season. He's now the number 6 ranked running back in standard leagues, which is just crazy to me. So,
yeah,
I mean, Conner's going to have the lead. He's going to have the reins for Carolina in Week 10, at Seattle Week 11. Then they go on bye, and he's probably going to start against Chicago in Week 13. So this is a chance. If you have James Conner, you're finally going to be able to reap the rewards of having him. And if you have Chase Edmonds, I mean, that it's just unfortunate you're going to be without him for maybe a month, maybe more.
Yeah, for sure. And that's definitely something that's true with Edmonds. And I think that Conner now becomes an instant must-start in any league. Not that he would have anyways, but this performance definitely puts him on notice, just because it's not only the 21 carries, 96 yards, he gets to the end zone twice, but it's those 5 receptions that really stand out. I mean, listen, he's not going to score 3 touchdowns again. But even if that's a guy you can get 15 points out of, an RB2, you'll take that any day of the week, because you didn't acquire him for anything, pretty much. So by the season, another guy that stood out to me as a big winner was Jonathan Taylor, who's, at this point, his production is just unbelievable. I mean, this is a guy who's, with Henry out for the season, this is...
Is he the RB1?
Yes.
I think he might be the RB1.
We can have a different conversation about RB rankings in a second, but I think it's safe to say, you just look at the production he's had. You know, early on in the season, he started a little bit slow. He wasn't being efficient early in the season. He is, in weeks 2 and 3, he scored single digits. But since then, he's just been on an absolute tear, and he scores 34 points this week, 19 carries, 172 yards. Yes, you do look at the receiving production, and it makes you a little bit worried in that since after week 1, he's had 3 receptions or less in every game this season. And that makes me a little scared, just because if he's not getting into the end zone, then all of a sudden you're faced with something where you can end up getting 19 carries for 100 yards and no touchdowns, 2 receptions. You're looking at 12, 13 points. But that being said, he scored at least 1 touchdown in each of his last 5 games, and that's something that's not a random coincidence. They're getting down to the goal line, and they're feeding Taylor. They're just going for him constantly, and with a rushing average of 9 yards per carry this game, he's just been dominant.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, since week 4, he has scored a touchdown in every game. There's multiple touchdowns in 3 of those 6 games from week 4 up until now. And in this game, Nyheim Hines also put up, 100 total yards and a touchdown. Obviously, everyone knows you can run all over the Jets, and they did that. But even with Hines taking 45% of the snaps, Jonathan Taylor's on there on the field for 69% of the snaps. He puts up 200 total yards and a touch, and two touchdowns. Like, this guy, like, even if he's not scoring touchdowns, and there's no reason to believe he won't keep scoring touchdowns with the schedule. I mean, he has Jacksonville coming up, and then Buffalo and Tampa. So it gets a little tougher there for Indianapolis. But Taylor's got the workload. I mean, 21 total touches in this game, 200 total yards. I think, I mean, he's a surefire RB1, maybe the overall RB1 on any given week.
For sure. And now to shift to another winner, and this was someone that I was certainly not expecting to be in this column, and that's Elijah Moore of the Jets. Elijah Moore has the best game of his career. He puts up 27.4 fantasy points on 7 receptions for 84 yards and 2 touchdowns, and this comes off a game in Week 8 against Cincinnati where he had 6 receptions for 67 yards and he put up 13.1 points. That's 3 straight games where Elijah Mitchell has put up double-digit points. And I think at some point, we have to wonder, Zach Wilson leaves the lineup, Elijah Moore's just exploding even more. Does that have something to do with the Corey Davis injury? Perhaps. But for a Jets team that's searching for offense anywhere they can get it, all of a sudden, Elijah Moore looks like a weapon and a guy that's easily a flex position role, I think, has to be considered that way, starting next week, right?
Yeah, I mean, in this Indianapolis and New York game, it was weird for the Jets. They had Mike White was starting, and then Josh Johnson came in after Mike White got hurt.
And Josh Johnson put up 24 fantasy
exactly, points. Exactly, yeah. He was good. I mean, the quarterback situation, I mean, it's probably going to be between White and Johnson. I think Wilson, they're saying he's not going to be rushed back. That's what Coach Sala is saying. And he's also saying they're going to name a starter on Wednesday. But Wilson, I mean, he hasn't been great this year. I think we all know that. But Mike White has flashed when he's gotten the opportunity. And he threw that touchdown to Elijah Moore early in the game before he left with injury. So I think Moore is fine. You know, with the Corey Davis injury, it is interesting if you maybe want to wait another week, but you don't want to waste another breakout week. I mean, he's expected to play Week 10, I'm reading. That was what Coach Sala said that after that hip injury. So it'll be interesting to see the target distribution there, but I think Elijah Moore has boomed in this game. 7 catches, 84 yards, 2 touchdowns, enough to be a fringe starter. I wouldn't throw him in your lineup and bench some more established guys. But if you need to, I would put money on him in the waiver wire and stash him for the rest of the season.
I agree. That's a guy you stash. And you wonder, will that offense revert back to kind of how Moore was being used before if Wilson becomes reintegrated? But at least for the next couple of games, again, he's not a good guy that's going to just put up 2 touchdowns every week. But that's definitely a PPR option, especially if you're needy at this point of the season, lacking depth for that flex role with all the injuries. Now, I want to shift to one more winner of this week, and a guy who we talked about last week being a winner, and now we're going back to him being a winner yet again because he outdid himself. Pat Freiermuth, your guy. What do you see from Freiermuth this week? On Monday Night Football, he puts up 2 touchdowns, 5 receptions, 43 yards. A great week for him. Is he like a legit fantasy starter right now?
Well, first things first, shout out to the fantasy footballers because the Muth is finally Luth. That's a fantasy footballer's reference. But yeah, he put up 21 points. I mean, off the tight end position, you can't ask for anything more. I think he's a starter. I think he's a maybe tight end one, maybe not top 7, maybe not top 5, but you know, maybe in the top 10, 12 of the tight ends. And for tight end, I mean, 6 targets. He's gotten 7 targets, 6 targets in his past 3 games, and he's been on the field for 60%+ of the snaps. So, and I mean, 3 touchdowns in the past 2 games as well. He's Big Ben can't push the ball down the field anymore. So,
Since week 6, Freiermuth leads all tight ends in fantasy football in points per game.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's all you need to hear. And there's no reason to not start him against Detroit. Detroit is not a good defense by any stretch of the imagination. So, I mean, I would keep him in there, keep rolling with Freiermuth. I started him in a league and I was down, I think, maybe 4 points. And he goes up and puts out 20 points. So, I mean, with Freiermuth, I mean, you just got to roll with him. I think he's going to be great.
Another thing with Freiermuth, in the last four weeks now upcoming of the regular season, all 4 are against bottom 10 fantasy tight defenses conceding points to fantasy tight ends. So Freiermuth is a guy, like, if you have him, great. If you don't have him, I would say buy high. This is a rare case, and I'm not usually someone that would go say buy high. This is a guy, Pat Freiermuth, like, yeah, he can kind of be a meme. I appreciate your fantasy football reference. But at the same time, this is a legit guy. I mean, yeah, it's fun, whatever. But this is an actual guy that I think has tight end one value over the remainder of the season. And for a lot of the teams that are kind of working on the fringes of tight end fantasy value, a great guy to try to go acquire here.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, for one of my teams, I had Logan Thomas on IR, and he was on bye also, so I couldn't. I had Ricky Seals-Jones also, so I cut RSJ, picked up Freiermuth, and now I have, you know, two solid tight ends with Logan Thomas coming back. So it does open avenues for trading, things like that, if I need to. But I mean, with Freiermuth, you have a solid tight end option. He's put up. I mean, with a tight end, you want double-digit points. You're going to be happy with 10 points. You're going to be happy with probably 8 points. Like, it depends on who you have, but with, like, these waiver wire guys, you're going to be happy with whatever they give you. If it's, you know, I mean, 7 targets, 7 catches for 58 yards a couple weeks ago, then 444 and a touch last week, then 543 and 2. So, I mean, as he goes forward, like I said, against Detroit, I think he's a surefire start.
I agree. Now we're transitioning to losers, and I think this entire team needs to be a loser, even though they actually won the real game, and that is the Kansas City Chiefs. This is, I think, the third straight week we've done a Kansas City Chiefs actually suck segment, and every week we say, don't worry, they're going to do better. And you know what? At some point, yeah, they win this game 13-7. Jordan Love is starting for Green Bay. They can't move the ball, etc. At some point, like, can we just say, you know what? The Kansas City offense actually kind of sucks. Like, I don't know what else do we need to see from Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes has had 34 points in his last 3 weeks. At some point, this is not a good player. Josh Johnson had 24 points and is off the bench for the New York Jets
and
this
Carson
week.
Wentz, I mean,
put Carson up 29, Wentz put up 29 points. Patrick Mahomes, like, I don't know what else do we need to see from the Kansas City Chiefs other than to say, you know, they're getting bludgeoned with cover two over the top against every opponent. It's a formula that works. And Travis Kelce is the only fantasy player this week for the Chiefs, including Mahomes, to put up over 10 fantasy points. Like, I don't know what else we need to see. They're just not very good.
Yeah, with Tyre, I mean, you're playing Jordan Love in his first NFL start, and you win, what, 13-7 or something?
Yeah, like, that's fine. They won the game.
But
for fantasy though.
But yeah, I'm saying, like, you're not a good team. Like, no, they just look off. I think I read something interesting about Mahomes. Like, it looks like he kind of has the yips out there. Like,
yeah,
it's weird. Like, you don't usually see this from such a poised quarterback like Mahomes. But we talked earlier. I mean, you can see in his game logs from week 2 to week 8, he had an interception or more in each of those games. And we talked about his profile, like, he has a lot of dropped interceptions. He had the most of those throughout his entire career, but now that's kind of regressing into, you know, those are being caught. And so, I mean, 37 pass attempts, and he gets 166 yards. Like, I don't know what's up with him. He has a bye in week 12, and I don't know, a game against the Raiders, like, do you feel comfortable starting him?
Here's the thing with Mahomes. Okay, so I mentioned, right, those 3 weeks in a row where he's had 34 points over those 3 weeks. It's not like he's bombing the ball down the field and, you know, it's just not going to incomplete. This will fall next game. No, Patrick Mahomes, in that three-week span, ranks 33rd in the NFL in vertical air yards. So I don't understand at a certain point, like, what are we doing here? The Davis Mills, Josh Johnson, and Trevor Siemian are all higher than Mahomes in vertical air yards per game over those last 3 weeks. So at some point, Mahomes has been reverted to this checkdown option, and that's also had an effect on the other players on the roster. Well, Tyreek Hill, all of a sudden, you know, this Tyreek Hill's not an effective player if he's just being used as a checkdown type player. I don't know, like, Tyreek Hill of this game, right? He's 4 receptions for 37 yards. If that's how you're going to use Tyreek Hill, there's no fantasy value to that. Tyreek Hill's a guy that when that Chiefs offense is flying, that's when Tyreek Hill's at his best. And the thing with Kelce, I predicted here on last week's episode that Kelce was going to break out big time against the Chiefs. And 17 points, he had a good performance, 5 receptions, 68 yards. He has a touchdown this game. But at the same time, I was not overly impressed. Kelce had a couple drops, just some, like,
he did have a
plays
couple
where Kelce is 32 years old. I think at this point, like, how do we differentiate? Has Kelce dropped off? Is it the Chiefs' offense? Is it both? I think probably it's somewhere in the middle if we're being realistic about it. But overall, just Chiefs' offense, it's just obscure. Like, Mecole Hardman is horrendous.
Yeah, Hardman, like, he's a cut. Like,
yeah.
And with Kelce, it's interesting. We came on here and talked about it. I was like, I don't think the talent's gone. I think it's just a victim of circumstance. But those drops, like, there's multiple drops a game for Kelce. And for a tight end who's usually as shorthanded as he is and has been in his career, it's just weird. And, I mean, with Tyreek Hill, like, we saw that 18 targets against the Giants, and he put up 27 fantasy points, great fantasy day. But he's not burning people over the top anymore. I don't think he's had a long touchdown since that breakout game in week 4 where he had 11 catches for 186 yards and 3 touchdowns. And, I mean, against the Raiders, division rival, the Raiders have no cornerbacks to speak of. This is the boom game you would think for Hill to break a big play.
Yeah,
well, but
Damon
I just don't
Arnett
think it's going to happen.
Yeah. Like, the Raiders are in complete flux. That situation's a disaster. This is a week, again, this is a week where you look at the team and you're like, this is the week they can break out. But why wouldn't that have been last week? The Packers kept punting the ball back to them with Jordan Love was incompetent. So at some point, I think we have to sit down with the Chiefs and say, what are we doing here?
I mean, you're not benching Tyreek Hill. Like,
no, and you're not going to bench Mahomes. You probably drafted him way higher than
yeah,
that.
You probably
in retrospect,
drafted him
you should
third
have.
Round or something where you probably shouldn't do that. But, I mean, with Kelce, Hill, Mahomes, you're not benching them. Mahomes, you know, maybe you have a waiver wire quarterback that you like better, but I don't think so.
No, because the thing is, okay, here's the other thing, though, and this is just someone that plays fantasy. If you bench Mahomes and then he does well, you won't get over it.
Yeah.
So just for as a protection for your future self, you're not going to bench Mahomes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that is true. But with the other guys in this offense, I mean, Darrell Williams and I think Derek Gore. Derek Gore didn't do anything to speak of. Darrell Williams. I mean,
Darrell Williams
has 77 total yards.
Okay, but I mean, 3.1 yards per carry. I mean, it's like he's been brutal, inefficient, and both in the running game and passing game. So at some point, Damian Williams is not the answer for this team's offense. And just if you're giving him that many touches, something's going wrong with your team. And they don't have much of a choice. And I think that a lot of that has to do with the status of Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, will Clyde Edwards-Helaire come back and revitalize his offense when he hasn't actually been that good this season?
No, he was never even that good.
Like, but he's a very obviously a talented athlete. Maybe he and Mahomes have a mind meld or something. He's back on the field. Mahomes immediately starts pushing the ball down the field or something. I don't know. But Coach Andy Reid says he's closer to a potential return. So I mean, if he's somehow on waivers, you got to stash him, put him in the IR spot. I mean, he's the running back on the Chiefs offense where, I mean, in the draft season, you're like, oh, running back in the Chiefs offense, like, this guy is a top 10 back, and he didn't show off, and Darrell Williams had a couple of good games, but the efficiency wasn't there. So, I mean, with CEH, I mean, you're going to stash him, but I mean, I don't know if you can expect big things from key pieces in this offense anymore.
I don't think so either. So now I'm going to transition to another loser. And again, this is another team that's week was so bad that I can't put one loser. I think it needs to be the entire team. The Buffalo Bills.
What happened to
the worst loss of the NFL season. Just a 9-6 dreadful drubbing, like just a miserable game by all accounts. They lose to Jacksonville. And this game, again, this is one where it's not a referendum on a singular player. But for Buffalo, it's not been a season-long problem like the Chiefs.
Absolutely not.
Do we give them a mulligan for this one game? I think that's an interesting question. Unlike the Chiefs, I'm more willing to do that.
Yeah, I mean, with Buffalo, it is interesting. In Miami, you saw the first half played out exactly like the first half of the Jacksonville game did, and they were getting shut out. They didn't look good.
But they didn't have the on switch in this game.
In the second half, they just turned it on. Josh Allen ends up with in that game against Miami with 3 total touchdowns, 55 rushing yards. And then against Jacksonville, his namesake on the other side, Josh Allen, just terrorized him the entire game. He had a couple sacks. He had a pick. He had a fumble.
Sorry, can we just take one interruption? I know we're a fantasy football podcast, but I just have one quick question. Did people overdo the Josh Allen versus Josh Allen thing? Was it that cool?
I thought it was funny.
Okay, like a little bit, but did we need the like 50th reference of it? Like, I think at some point it was enough. Like, all right, it's a common name.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just funny.
It was a little, but I think it was overdone. All right, sorry, I digress. Back to fantasy football.
And Josh Allen, he's going to be just fine. He still ran for 50 yards in this game. I mean, he's the number 5 overall quarterback. If someone is spooked, trade for him now. Do it. He's playing the Jets next week. He's got Indianapolis and New Orleans the weeks after. So the Bills' offense, I think they're going to be okay. Emmanuel Sanders got off the schneid there. He did not record a goose. He had 10 fantasy points, which is good. Stephon Diggs also had 14.
Can I unleash a brief Diggs take? Trade Diggs before the deadline. Get it in.
Yeah,
Diggs.
I mean,
you know what? And you look at the statistics of Diggs over the past few weeks, and on the surface, it looks pretty good, right? In those last 3 games, he put up 24 points against Tennessee in Week 6, coming off the bye, 15 points against Miami, and then 14.5 against Jacksonville. But when I say trade Diggs, and here's why. Diggs right now is just relying on short passes. He's not getting down the field. On the season, Diggs is 3rd on his own team in potential air yards. Emmanuel Sanders is getting the deep work, and Diggs has been relegated to more of a checkdown receiver that's reliant on touchdowns to generate his fantasy value. So It's really just short passes. And he hasn't even been getting that at the same value he was getting last year. Because remember, Diggs started out slow last year, but then in his final eight games, he had at least seven catches in every game. We haven't been seeing that this season. And right now, you look at Diggs on the season, he's wide receiver 21, which is obviously not where you drafted him if you took him at the end of the first round. You drafted at the
end of the first round.
End of the first round. Of course, that's been disappointing. But I think you ride the momentum of these last 3 weeks and try to get rid of him, because I'm personally off the Diggs train right now.
He has the name value. We are approaching week 10 of the season, so in a trade discussion, you'd be like, oh, look, Diggs was drafted
He has no vertical passing touchdowns of over 30 yards on the entire season.
Yeah, it's very interesting that they're using Emmanuel Sanders in the way that they are. They had that 3rd and 22 play where Emmanuel Sanders was running over the top. He got the catch for 22 yards, and Diggs was running underneath.
And that's how it's been all season, which is just the contrary to what we saw a season ago and what made him that late first-round pick.
Yeah, so with the Bills' offense, I mean, you're going to hold Josh Allen. You're starting him. If you have Diggs, you're starting him. If you have Sanders, I mean, I would advise starting him against the Jets. It's the Jets. Like, they have no defense to speak of. But it's interesting, like, the wide receiver 23 on the season in standard leagues, 21 in PPR, is Diggs, but he has the name recognition to maybe get you, you know, I don't know.
His production's been solid. It's been good. But I'm just saying, like, overall, this is a guy that's been good. But, like, if you can net someone that maybe looks slightly better.
Like Marquise Brown.
On paper. Hollywood. If you could get Hollywood Brown, I mean, do that.
I've been trying to get him for a while. I think that ship has sailed, though, unfortunately.
Yeah.
His latest 100-yard game.
Hollywood Brown has just been amazing. And we can get to that in a minute. But I think sometimes, like, you also just have to account for the fact that fantasy football, it can be random. Like, Carson Wentz had more points than Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes combined this week. So did Josh Johnson. Sometimes fantasy football, we can come on here and we can try to explain it as we're doing the best we can. But there's some times where the team just had an off week. You know, Brian Daboll and that offense just kind of sleptwalked through that game. And it was ugly. Josh Allen had some really, really, really bad plays. He took a few sacks. He was being berated all game. I mean, Jacksonville won that game because their line just pulverized that Bills offensive line. And that has to do with some injuries as well up front for Buffalo. But by that same token, I think that the Bills offense just has too much talent, too much of a track record. And I think, let's say this comes again next week and we start to see the same thing, then all of a sudden I'm saying, okay, maybe we need to step back and we need to reevaluate that. Because if they go to the Jets and have another bad week, that's a cause for concern. But as it stands right now, I say they have the Jets and the Colts in back-to-back weeks in 10-11. For the most part, stay cool on the Bills.
Yeah, and in that game, there James Robinson was out. Carlos Hyde gets 21 carries for, I think, 67 yards. So he was obviously non-efficient, not really a factor in the passing game. And James Robinson should be able to play in Week 10. This is a guy I want to acquire. In the fantasy playoffs, Weeks 14 to 17, he has the fifth best schedule in football strength of schedules to running backs. So I can look at the schedule right now. He's got Houston in there, the Jets in there, the Titans in there. So if James Robinson is coming off of a game where he did not play, he's still injured technically, so you can probably acquire him for cheaper than you would have.
Yes.
He's a number 17 running back, so I would be looking to get him if I were a playoff bound team.
I agree. And shifting now to another guy who is maybe a loser, not personally, but a loser of circumstance, Christian McCaffrey.
Ooh.
McCaffrey comes back this week, and I'll say I feel like it was kind of under-talked about. I don't know if you felt that, but like this is a guy that was the number one pick in pretty much every league. He misses 5 weeks, and he comes back, and I was kind of like, all right, McCaffrey, guess who's back? All right. And it was just business as usual. He gets 14 carries in this game, 4 receptions, and there was kind of this thing about, oh, we're going to limit his workload, and perhaps that was true to an extent, but he was mostly full throttle. The issue with McCaffrey is not McCaffrey's talent. Let's make that clear. The issue with McCaffrey is Sam Darnold and Joe Brady and a Carolina Panthers offense that when McCaffrey was in those first 2 weeks, remember, Carolina's offense the first 3 weeks was one of the best offenses in the league. Joe Brady, everyone was like, Joe Brady can have his pick of any NFL job in the league, blah, blah, blah. Who wouldn't want him? This team offense is amazing. Darnold's back. McCaffrey's awesome. Everything was going great. Remember a couple things about that entire circumstance. That first run of the season was against the Jets, the Saints, and the Texans.
Yep.
After the schedule started to get harder, this offense has just been flat out horrendous. And McCaffrey now comes back into one of the worst offenses in the entire NFL. You know, over the past 3 weeks, Carolina has averaged only 0.82 points per offensive drive. That's bad. Is second worst in the league behind only Jacksonville's 0.76. Think about how bad that is. How McCaffrey can be a great player, but he's not Derrick Henry. And from the running back position, there's only so much the guy can do with one of the worst offensive lines in the entire NFL. This is a guy who's a victim of his circumstance, not his own talent. Him staying on the field is a victory for him personally. It's a victory for his fantasy managers. But the circumstance he's coming into, you can't expect this to be a guy that's putting up 25-plus points guaranteed per week and what merited him being the first overall pick.
Yeah, McCaffrey, he was only on the field with 49% of the offensive snaps. He did still total 106 yards. So I watched some of his snaps. He didn't look great. He didn't look as explosive as he would, and that is to be expected coming off of a what is it, 5-week injury. So, I mean, I hope he can rest up, get a little more healthy, and then be on the field for – he's not going to be on the field for 100% of the touches like he was for every game in 2019, 2020. He'll be on the field probably 70% of snaps, I think, when he's fully there. And Sam Darnold, they're going to bench him.
Sam Darnold, do you realize that in two of his last three games, he's had under 3 fantasy points? That's not a typo. 3. Yeah. Like, literally, he had 16 – he was complete 16 passes on 33 attempts for 172 yards and 3 interceptions, and he got 1.78 fantasy points.
Yeah, I mean, this was honestly to be expected playing against Bill Belichick, who I mean, Sam Darnold in that game against
the Patriots. I think you could be –
he was on the Jets, he was like, I'm seeing ghosts. Like I was expecting this for Darnold.
You can't expect one fan, like, literally one.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wasn't starting Sam Darnold.
No, of course, and no one, and hopefully no one was.
Yeah, I think it might be time for P.J. Walker in this offense. I don't think he's going to be as much better, but I mean, maybe just try to see what they have in him. Darnold, obviously, the Sam Darnold experiment worked against 3 of the worst teams. I mean, New Orleans wasn't one of the worst teams, but I mean, Darnold looked good in that game. But then against Houston and the Jets, I mean, Sam Darnold looked serviceable. But then, I mean, in the past 6 weeks, he's just been awful. So McCaffrey, maybe with P.J. Walker, he'll have a little more efficiency. But going forward, I mean, he still had 4 catches for 54 yards. You're still going to start him. He's still going to be a top 10 back. But, you know, maybe not, like you said, the number one running back in fantasy.
I agree. And now shifting to another running back who's been better this season and had a bit of an off week, Daryl Henderson. Now, I want to talk about the Rams because, first of all, with the Rams, Cooper Kupp, this is getting to the point where it doesn't even make sense. I mean, this game, they lose this game 28-16 to Tennessee. But don't worry, Cooper Kupp still got his 11 receptions for 95 yards. I mean, it doesn't even make sense, the production that this guy's had. This is prime Calvin Johnson-level production. And I think a lot of that stems from his ability to understand the route concept and what he's trying to do. And Sean McVay, with a competent quarterback, is able to instill that in the offense. But so Kupp and Woods are both productive in this week. Kupp has 20 points, Woods 17. But for the running game, it was a little bit odd for the Rams. Henderson only gets 8 points, and it was a pretty inefficient week. He has 11 carries for 55 yards, 3 receptions for 3 yards. Can we just chalk this up for Henderson to just a bad week? It was a weird game, an off game. But that makes 2 of his last 3 games where he's had single digits. Does it get a little concerning?
I don't think so. I mean, there is the one issue I have with Henderson is that he is going on his bye in week 11. So there might be some – I don't think there's going to be restructuring in the offense. I mean, he's still the number 11 running back in PPR. But we saw in week 8 against Houston – obviously, Houston is a bad defense – but they looked at him on the goal line. I mean, in receiving, he had a 3-yard receiving touchdown. But what is concerning is the receiving work.
He only had
3 catches for 3 yards and then 1 catch for 3 yards the week before. I don't know why they're not utilizing him. He's a dynamic talent. He, I mean, like you said, averaged 5 yards a carry, 6.43.
Well, the reason why Henderson is not getting receptions is because of none other than Sony Michel.
Yeah,
Sony Michel, we have not really talked about him much. Last week, Sony Michel put together 2 receptions. He put together another 2 this week. It's not, again, that he's putting up this monstrous receiving work, but he's in on a lot of those passing downs if you actually watch the games, and that's something that is a little bit concerning to me.
Yeah, and Stafford was off in this game. He had an ankle sprain, but McVay says he should be fine. Henderson also left the game briefly with an ankle. I think that is when Michelle had a little more time in the game. But with the Rams offense, I think it's the same thing with the Bucks. They've been so, Buffalo, they've been so consistent. I mean, going to the game against San Francisco, Stafford in the lineup, Woods in the lineup, Henderson's in the lineup, no question about it. They do have their bye in week 11, but then going in, they got Green Bay, which I mean is a solid matchup if you're not like the Chiefs, and then they have Jacksonville and Arizona. So, I mean, with Henderson, maybe try to acquire him, but I don't like acquiring people who haven't had their bye yet. I feel like it's just setting yourself up for more more difficult situations. But Henderson, he's been good enough. He's the number 11, like I said, running back. So I think, I mean, I don't know. He only played 60% of the snaps, but I think with Henderson, you're going to wait and see. And against San Francisco, he's going to be in your lineup.
I agree. So I now want to talk about the Cowboys for a minute. Basically, everyone was a loser for the Cowboys in the wide receiver room. All the wide receivers except for Malik Turner, two garbage time touchdowns. Shout out.
Except Turner was started in approximately zero leagues this week.
Two garbage time touchdowns, though. Like, because it looks like, because on Red Zone, it was one of those blowout games where they weren't showing anything other than touchdowns. And when you looked at Malik Turner, you were like, didn't he just score a garbage time touchdown? And then it was actually, no, he scored two garbage time touchdowns. It was like one of those where Scott Hansen was doing the thing where he's like, hey, we still show every touchdown from every game. It was one of those. Shout out. If he's listening, he's definitely not listening. But if he is.
Scott, if you're listening, I love you.
Yeah. Anyways, though. CeeDee Lamb has another really concerning week. This is his third game of the season. He's played in 8 games. In 3 of those 8 games, he's had 3 receptions or less. This is his second week with only 2 receptions. He gets 2 receptions for 23 yards, finishing with 4.3 fantasy points. Yeah. He's been really high. He's had great highs, the 36-point performance, of course, against New England week 6, but he's had lows like this week. And this is a guy, as we kind of talked about with the Bucks, the Cowboys receivers are very, very hit and miss. Lamb has 4 points this week. Amari Cooper has 5 points this week. These are guys that you're going to have to live with that in order to also get the highs that this Cowboys offense can bring when it's booming at its fullest potential.
I am actually not worried about CeeDee Lamb. I think
really?
I watched some of this game. I think there were 2 or 3 deep shots. Dak just missed him. Dak was just off in this game. I really don't know what happened to him. I mean, there's 3 quarterbacks you can say. I mean, Dak, Josh Allen, and Mahomes, who are just not themselves. And I mean, Dak Prescott salvages his fantasy day with a couple garbage time touchdowns. He also ran in for a 2-point conversion, which also helped. But CeeDee Lamb, he still had his 9 targets. And I mean, the game with Cooper Rush against Minnesota, he puts up 6 catches for 112 yards, which I did not expect. And I mean, Lamb is out targeting Cooper. He's on the field for more snaps. Mike Gallup is going to come back, which is maybe concerning, but I think Lamb, I think he's supplanted Cooper as a wide receiver 1 in this offense.
Also, keep in mind, the Cowboys, we talked about 4 more weeks in the regular season of most fantasy leagues, and those next 4 opponents are Atlanta, Kansas City, Vegas, New Orleans. Those are all...
You can exploit those schedules.
Those are all bottom, I'd say bottom half defenses, certainly some of them. Like Kansas City and Atlanta.
I talked about this a little bit last episode, but CeeDee Lamb is just so electric. It's just insane.
Ways to get the ball.
But yeah, I mean, like they can put him in like screens. Like I don't know, they should force the ball to him a little bit. I mean, he is so electric with the ball in his hands, and he's getting those deep shots that like we talk about Tyreek Hill, who's not getting those. And I mean, I like I said, 2 or 3 deep shots, Dak Prescott just overthrew him. He was wide open down the sideline.
Wide open. And that's the thing with Lamb. If Lamb can get that ball in his hands, what he can do after the catch is there's almost no one in the league that's like him. He just has to get the ball in that offense. And there's a lot of mouths to feed in that Cowboys offense, which makes them really good in real life. I mean, not the last 2 weeks, but, okay, with the exception of those last 2 weeks, in real life, the Cowboys offense is really, really potent. They have a lot of mouths to feed, and for fantasy football, that can come in, you know, when they're spreading the ball around to Cedric Wilson and now apparently Malik Turner, and you have Dalton Schultz getting in the action, Blake Jarwin before he went a hit, when he went on IR. There's a lot of people in that Cowboys offense that all are kind of these intriguing guys, and if Lamb can get his share, of course he and Cooper are the most dominant ones. But they have to get that production, and they have to get those receptions in order to make their impact, because they're not going to be PPR guys. They're going to be guys that excel in their yards, big plays, touchdowns.
Yeah, and with Dallas, like you said, they have the number 1 rated strength of schedule in the fantasy playoffs for wide receivers, also for quarterbacks. So if you are a Dak Prescott owner, I think you can hang your head on that a little bit. And like you said, for standard versus PPR, he is a boomer bust guy, unlike a player like Keenan Allen, who's going to be the floor play. But I think CeeDee Lamb, like we saw in week 6, he has the potential to win you a week with that 36-point game. And he's just amazing. Like, I don't know what else to say about him. Like, this was an off game, but I think CeeDee Lamb's going to be fine.
I do, too. Speaking of other people that I think are going to be fine, that I'm big fans of, Kyle Pitts. Now, we've talked about Atlanta many weeks in a row because they've had a lot of things in flux. This week for Atlanta, I think, was a good litmus test for what they're going to do, knowing that Calvin Ridley is now out for an extended period of time, how they're going to spread around the targets. I mean, Olamide Zaccheaus, I think I pronounced that right, scores 2 touchdowns. Aside from that, I mean, he wasn't that involved. Yeah, that brings a great fantasy performance, but he had 3 receptions. That's not like some guy that just, he happened to get 2 touchdowns. But that being said, how they spread around the targets is really interesting. I think Kyle Pitts is both has a lot more upside because of this, but also a much lower floor, in that his target rate is really, really going to improve. This week, he only gets 3 receptions. But that being said, I'm a believer in him long-term because it doesn't look like the Falcons are trying to replace the Ridley production and the targets that he gets on the outside with one player. Russell Gage, yes, he gets 6-7 receptions. I've kind of been banging the Russell Gage drum for a few weeks here as this, like, bench guy. You know, I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I do roster Russell Gage in both my leagues, I'm just saying.
There you go.
That being said, I'm a believer in, like, this Falcons offense. Cordell Patterson, at this point, is he the second wide? Is he the second best running back in fantasy football? I know name recognition, whatever, but if we're being serious here, I think behind Jonathan Taylor is Cordell Patterson. He might be the running back 2 in the entire NFL at this point.
So right now, ranking wise, he is 7 in PPR.
But consistency.
But consistency wise, I mean, he had that 34-point week against Washington week 4, but he's been above 14 PPR points in every week except week 1, where they were still easing him, or, you know, they didn't know how to use him. But I think I would put Eckler ahead of him. I think I would still put Kamara ahead of him. So, like, Patterson, he in sleeper, he is a running back and a wide receiver, which I think is awesome. Just for eligibility's sake, that's just so cool. I mean, I can think of Ty Montgomery, who had that dual eligibility.
But the difference with Ty Montgomery and everyone, I feel like Ty Montgomery is the comparison only because he's the only other person to be listed as a running back and wide receiver, and the only person to wear a number in the 80s and line up the backfield. Ty Montgomery was a guy where it was like, oh, that's kind of cute. You know, if you guys get out, oh, look who we bring in. Ty Montgomery wears number 88 and he lines up in the backfield. All right, great. Cordell Patterson is a weapon in this offense.
Yeah, he had 6 catches for 126 yards.
And by the way, and those were not easy catches. I mean, he had one back shoulder fade on the left side.
That was with the time running out. They needed to
unbelievable. Get down
the field. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put 9 carries for 10 yards this week, 9 carries for 35 yards. So he's not getting, I mean, Mike Davis is an afterthought at this point. I'm sorry for all you Mike Davis owners, including myself. I'm done with him, man.
So I'm not a Mike Davis owner, but I've been a Mike Davis believer for a long time. I think at this point, 9 carries, I mean, it's not like Mike Davis's production was somehow way better. The Falcons rushing attack of this game is actually one of the worst I've ever heard of. Cordell Patterson had 9 carries for 10 yards. Mike Davis had 9 carries for 13 yards. I mean, that's 18 carries between the two for 23 yards. That, like, doesn't even make sense how bad that is. But that being said, Patterson's the guy in this offense. And the Falcons are just this fun team, right? Because you have a guy that wears number 84 that lines up in the backfield and acts like a running back, and then he also is a receiver. You got a guy that wears number 8 that is lined up and listed as a tight end, and he lines up all over the place, and he's used across the entire field. They're just this fun team, and Arthur Smith's having fun. And Matt Ryan, by the way, 28 points after. Of course, Matt Ryan has a dud week when I started him last week with Lamar on bye.
That's fantasy football.
Now I drop him. He had 6 points last week for me. Of course, now I drop him to free agency. He gets 28, but that's how it goes.
I think one thing, just to push back a little on the Cordero's and number 2 running back.
Yeah, push back.
I don't think so. Like, I mean, I'm just looking at the top rankings in running backs. Like, Najee Harris, I would put ahead of him. No. Eckler, I would put ahead of him. Cook, I would put ahead of him. Kamara, I would put ahead of him. I mean, rest of season, I would still put Swift ahead of him. I mean, you can look at, like, strength of schedule, stuff like that. I'm not 100% sure. But I think Cordero is a top 10 in running back, and he's also a top 10 in wide receiver. So he's the kind of weapon that is unmatched at this point when it comes to eligibility's sake. But I wouldn't put him in the he's in a high tier of running backs, but he's not in the top 5 or top 3.
Here's the thing with Cordell Patterson. He's the only player in the league since week 1 to put up at least 14 points in every single game. This is the most consistent fantasy player. This is not a boom bust kind of guy. Maybe Najee Harris, actually. Him and Harris, I think, are the only two.
Yeah, Harris has not put up under 16 points.
Okay, so I'm sorry. So you're right. Patterson and Harris, those are the only two.
Yeah, Najee Harris, his workload. I mean, this is what you were looking at and when you drafted him in the middle.
It wasn't that he was going to be. I mean, he was great at Alabama. He was one of those guys at Alabama that was, you know, in that Derrick Henry-esque mode.
His highest yards per carry this year is 5.3, but, I mean, his lowest points is 6, and that was in week 1, and then since then he hasn't gotten under 16, and that 16.8 was this week against Chicago.
Okay, here's my thing about Najee Harris, though. His consistency has been amazing, obviously, since week 1, as we just alluded to. The receiving work has gone down.
That is true.
Exponentially, yeah. Lately. Of course, the pinnacle was that he had 14 catches for 102 yards against Cincinnati in week 3. But since that point, it's been all downhill for him. The last two games against Cleveland and Chicago, he has 3 receptions in each of those two games. And again, he's getting enough rush. He got rushing touchdowns in each of those games to salvage those weeks. But if it's not for that, he needs more receiving work.
He does, yeah. And Najee Harris's receiving work has been a subject of a lot. I mean, 5 catches, 43 yards week 2. Then the big 19-target game, like you were talking about. And then, I mean, 6 catches, 46 yards, and a touchdown against Seattle week 6. Then they go on their bye, and he's only 6 catches total in the last 2 weeks. But he's the number 4 running back in PPR. He's locked into your lineup as a top 5 back for sure. I mean, consistency-wise, like we were talking about, I think he's maybe number 2 or number 3 in the league in on that front. But with the Steelers' offense, it is just a little bit shaky.
Well, the thing with the Steelers is, outside of Harris, obviously, and now we're saying Freiermuth.
The Muth is Luth.
There's no one else in the Steelers' offense that you're starting in fantasy.
I think you're starting Deontay every week.
Are you?
I would. I mean, he's the past. He was out week 3.
But I guess you
every
are.
Week.
He's been season, consistent. He's been no, you're right. He's been consistent.
Except for week 9 against Chicago, where he had 11.7. But the target share is.
He's getting the targets.
Has been there. And against Chicago, he only has 6 targets, which I found interesting. That offense, it was just weird, honestly. Big Ben can't push the ball down the field like we were talking about. But I think you're putting Deontay in your lineup maybe as a wide receiver 2-3 option. But
that's fair.
But with Claypool, he's a
Claypool's
not a guy
you start with.
Yeah, you're hoping for maybe he breaks a screen pass long or a slant long, something like that. He's not going to get a deep shot.
Maybe. I do have to say, how many fantasy games were swung by Chris Boswell dropping 16 last night?
Yeah, the Steelers offense, they do like stalling out in the red zone and giving.
I just love Monday night games when kickers go crazy, and you know the amount of people that were pissed about that. It's phenomenal. And I'm personally, I mean, we don't need to get into a fantasy conversation about a philosophical conversation about kickers and fantasy, but I have extended it about that. So now, before we get out of here, I want to hit waivers this week. And as I alluded to very early on in the episode, as we get to this point in the season, the waiver wire is thinning out. That being said, there are still ways to improve your team, and as we increase injuries, there's definite holes on people's rosters. So where do you look right now for on the waiver wire this week?
I think the big one, in my opinion, is Devontae Freeman. He is playing on Thursday night against for the Ravens against Miami. He found the end zone last week. He was on the field for 60% of snaps, 13 carries, 79 yards, and then 2 catches for an additional 4 yards and that touchdown. So he is, I mean, you got to look at Latavius Murray's status, but because it is a Thursday night game, I think Murray is not going to play. And I think you can fire up Freeman as maybe a top 25 back.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I think Miami.
No one in the Ravens offense is a top 25 back.
I think Devontae is.
Because Le'Veon is stealing some plays. And Le'Veon's looked, by the way,
he's looked
good, but I don't even think it matters how good people look. Everyone is just, that thing's a crapshoot on a week-by-week basis. And yeah, you can get production out of them. You absolutely can get production. I mean, Devontae Freeman had 16 points this week. You can get production because he had 13 carries for 79 yards, 2 receptions as well, and receiving, one of those being a touchdown. You can get production. Devontae Freeman's had double digits in his last 3 games. But that being said, it's such a crapshoot. And how do you know? Is this the week that all of a sudden Le'Veon Bell is going to steal his goal line carry? Because that's something that's been happening too. Le'Veon Bell has 11 carries in this game. As someone that's starting Devontae Freeman, that's something that worries me at least.
And I agree. I think I would still be okay starting Freeman, especially if I was in a pinch. But a big storyline is Nick Chubb and Jamitric Felton both tested positive for COVID-19.
Right,
so
yeah.
They are both vaccinated, or at least they said they're vaccinated. We don't know for sure at this point. I mean, but yeah, they are vaccinated.
Yes.
but based on the Aaron situation, you can never be too careful. But so, I mean, if Dearness Johnson is somehow on the waiver wire, I mean, he's a guy you're going to want to pick up. They are playing New England, which is a tough defense, but we saw when Darnell Johnson got his play against the Broncos, he was, or was it the Jets? I think it was the Broncos. But he looked really, really good in that role as the lead back. So I think Chubb, there's a probably a good chance Chubb will gain clearance because he what they need is two negative COVID tests 24 hours apart, but they did test positive, so you don't know if it's actually a real positive.
And the protocol for vaccinated players is that if they get two negative tests within 24 hours of the game, they can play, even if they did test positive earlier in the week.
Yeah, exactly. So, and with Felton, it doesn't matter that much because we saw when Chubb was out and Kareem Hunt was out, Felton was kind of relegated to the backup role with Jarnus Johnson taking over. But, I mean, Nick Chubb puts up 137 yards and two touchdowns, adding 26 yards receiving. So he's great. As we all know, even though he's been out a couple weeks, he's still the number 14 back in PPR. So you should look out for that with Jarnus Johnson. Then also the Eagles' backfield is something. It's a mess.
Jordan Howard, though, I think that's a must-start guy at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, we came on here, banged the drum for, or I don't know if we did, but, I mean, other fantasy people came on and was like, okay, Boston Scott's going to be the guy now. Boston Scott doesn't.
Jordan Howard had a week, though.
Yeah, Jordan Howard has the week. Kenny Gainwell, I mean, he has 3 yards for a touchdown. Yeah,
I think Gainwell, absolutely. Gainwell is on the back burner right now, and I think Harris is the guy that you – Harris. Howard is the guy right now that you want to target.
I mean – Jordan Howard has always been a talented running back. I don't know why.
Dating back
to the Bears, exactly. He had 17 carries for 71 yards and a touchdown in this game. Only 47 of the snaps. I think his usage is going to go up against Denver. I feel like it has to. And he's a great waiver wire option. You're looking at Ramondre Stevenson on the Patriots. Both him and Harris, I believe, are on the concussion protocol. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, for sure. Harris's status is... Harris has been placed in the concussion protocol and... You're correct. Stevenson is too. I think Stevenson's a guy that, let's say Stevenson does exit the protocol and Harris has to miss some time, all of a sudden he becomes a must add at a starting level.
Yeah,
guy,
with 27% of the snaps, Ramondre Stevenson totals 106 yards with 27% of the snaps, two catches, 44 yards. He's a rookie. He is a really
electric
talent. And Damien Harris is a guy I just traded away. I'm so happy I did that.
Yeah.
Because he fantasy value is relying on touchdowns, which isn't a great thing when you're thinking about running backs. And he also has that nagging injury now in the concussion protocol. And Brandon Bolden, I mean, I think he's still going to have his receiving down role even if Stevenson and Harris are out. I think J.J. Taylor's probably going to get some looks in that offense. But the carousel for the Patriots running backs is always moving, so that might be one you want to stay away from. But I think if Ramondre Stevenson is active, he's a good start.
I agree. Another guy, and this is again, I mean, when you get to this point in the season, who we're asking for in the waiver wire, it gets desperate in a hurry. I mean, it really does. Eno Benjamin. Now this is a deep level cut right here. Eno Benjamin's only played at all in two games this season. The first game against Houston. In week 7, he had 2 rushes for 7 yards. And then this week, all of a sudden, now a third-string running back, you have Edmonds go out, and now all of a sudden, Eno Benjamin comes in 9 carries for 39 yards, and he gets a rushing touchdown on the goal line. So is Eno Benjamin a guy that could be in line for some real work here? We mentioned Connor, but this is an X-Men up guy, and a B that could potentially give standalone value if they don't want to overuse Connor, and they kind of use him in a platoon role. So again, that's a guy that you are not starting Eno Benjamin this week, but you look to add him to your roster if you're really looking for some depth at the running back position.
Yeah, with James Conner also, I mean, he has had injury history. He obviously battled cancer, and, they probably want to keep him fresh in the backfield, especially the way they've been utilizing him with Chase Edmonds in the entire season has been as a 1-2 punch as opposed to him being the lead guy. So I think Conner is going to be the lead guy, but Benjamin's going to come in and spell him. It might be kind of a Kamara Ingram situation. Not saying either of those players are
what do you, by the way, okay, Kamara, in terms of Ingram, but, what do you see as Ingram?
Yeah.
Right now, is that a guy that you're looking to target?
I don't know if I'm looking to target Ingram.
I mean, he's only rostered 22% of leagues. He should be available in most leagues.
He did have 5 catches for 21 yards. I think we came on here and we said, I said I like Ingram for Kamara, but Kamara's usage was a little bit concerning. He only had 14 carries and he only had his first target in the second half of the game. He did end up with a touchdown and 20 fantasy points, but... Ingram looks like he's taking more work than I thought he would be.
Well, here's the actual data to back that up. So Ingram this week has 25 offensive snaps. Kamara has 46. Here's the interesting thing, though. They almost split rush snaps. So Kamara got 14 rushes, Ingram 11. On passing snaps, though, Kamara outsnapped Ingram 32-14. And he ran 30 routes to Ingram's 11. So they're really doing this kind of inverse thing that we almost don't see from many teams. Because most teams, right, you assume the bell cow, the lead guy is getting on the rushes, and then the third down back comes in on receiving downs. New Orleans works in the inverse, where they like to use Kamara on all passing downs, and then the platoon guy comes in on the rushing plays for the most part. And you mentioned Ingram was actually productive with 5 receptions this week, but I wouldn't rely on him as a PPR kind of guy. That seemed more fluky to me. He happened to get a few checkdowns while he happened to be in the game on those downs, but they're not looking to use him as a receiver. He's a guy that has little standalone value, but were Kamara to go down for some reason, he's a guy I think you want to roster on your bench, though, either way.
Yeah, Kamara still, like I said, had 104 total yards, 20.4 fantasy points. So against Tennessee, then Philly and Buffalo, he's obviously in your lineup. He's a surefire, maybe top 7 back, maybe not the top 3 back you were expecting him as. But, I mean, he's still an RB1. You're still putting him in your lineup every weekend. With the quarterback situation, it is going to be interesting if it is going to be Taysom Hill or Simeon. We saw them split QB reps, which I thought was an interesting strategy. It obviously did not end up working for them. But I think Kamara, even though he did get, less than 15 carries and only had 50 yards, he did find the end zone. He did have 4 catches for 54 yards. So he's, like I said, not the surefire top 3 back you drafted, but still a top 10, top 7 back.
No, and again, on the wide receiver front and waivers, I will continue to bang the Rashad Bateman drum to the extent that you don't have him. I get his production's been kind of like meh, whatever, in his first 3 games of his career, but he has 5 receptions this week, and I'm telling you, like, I just think that this guy's prime. You want to get a piece of that offense, and if Bateman's a guy right now that's still rostered in just 24% of leagues, go in, get Bateman. That's the guy you want to stash on your bench. You're not looking to start right now, but come playoff time, that could be a valuable, really valuable piece, just when they look to diversify their offense and not just go to Hollywood Brown, because obviously they're going to him primarily, but were Hollywood Brown to go down, all of a sudden this is going to be a guy. And even with Hollywood Brown working alongside him, I'm a believer in Bateman. I get it's not been overly exciting so far. I've been talking about this for weeks, and nothing's really happened yet, but I'm not losing faith in Bateman at all.
No, I think there's no reason to. He got 8 targets. He
right, exactly.
Double-digit fantasy points, which, I mean, from a flex option, which is where you're starting Bateman, you want double digits. 10 or more points is where you want to be. And he has the opportunity. I mean, you look at his talent. He reminds me of, I mean, Marquise Brown. They have a very similar profile. He's got the speed. He's a little bigger than Marquise Brown. So I think with Bateman, the remaining games, the Ravens have the 8th best strength of schedule for wide receivers. So I think he's primed to maybe, elevate himself to maybe wide receiver 3 tier instead of a flex option. But, I mean, like you said, just get him on your lineup. Get a part of this offense.
And one more for you. I know this isn't really that exciting because he's been around the ringer so many times. DeSean Jackson is now on Las Vegas. DeSean Jackson was released by the Rams. They kind of went with Van Jefferson for their deep threat. Jackson was kind of being like, why am I not getting more targets? It's like, dude, you're 34. But that being said, DeSean Jackson now replaces Henry Ruggs. Obvious reasons why Ruggs is gone. There's a reason why the Raiders went and signed DeSean Jackson. They need a deep threat. And Jackson, he still has that straight line speed. That burst has not gone away. This is a guy, again, you're not starting him right now. But Jackson has some potential here to be a stash guy. And then if they try to feature him in the offense, we don't know exactly what that's going to look like yet. But I think that's at least a guy that you might want to consider putting on your bench if you're looking for some depth at the position.
Yeah, when he was on the Rams, obviously Van Jefferson, Robert Woods, and of course Cooper Kupp is there to siphon targets away from him. We haven't seen him play for the Raiders yet, so you don't want to – I mean, I wouldn't – I wouldn't waste a roster spot on him at this point, honestly.
If you're desperate.
If you're desperate, yes. And if we see that he is getting multiple deep looks a game like Ruggs was, he's worth putting on your bench. And then you look at your matchup and the given week, are you not favored? Do you need a big play to
push
you over the
hump? Right, and he's going to be fueled by having, 3 receptions for 72 yards, one of which was a 60-yard touchdown. That's what you're looking
for.
And
we saw Ruggs. I mean, Carr was dialing up deep shots to him maybe 3 or 4 times a game. Some of them connected, some of them didn't. That's the nature
right.
of
it. And my whole point with bringing him up, as you're alluding to, right, is that if he's featured in the offense in that same way, that's when you can start to see some production out of him.
Yeah, I mean, he, like you said, he's a 34-year-old, but he does have that speed. He had a game against Miami where he had 3 catches for 120 yards and a touchdown. He had a 68-yard reception in Week 5. That's really the extent of his production this year. But, I mean, we've seen he's an old guy, but he still has that burst, so you want to wait and see if Carr is dialing up shots to him late in games.
Any more waiver wire things stand out to you before we wrap it up here?
I don't know. I think, I would look into strength of schedules in the fantasy playoffs, maybe in the remaining games, and just see if there's any running backs, wide receivers you want to target if you're a playoff-bound team. And if not, just maybe try to get players that have already had their
bye. We'll have a future episode coming up later this week, next week, about fantasy playoff schedules as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we're getting to it. The fantasy season has been flying by, but I mean, we're getting into week 10 now, which is kind of crazy to think about, considering. I mean, it's been going.
Yeah, we're more than halfway done of the fantasy football season. Well, I think that was a pretty good recap of what's going on this week. Again, the waiver wires, it's getting thin at this point in the season, and a lot of times you're just stuck with what you have, but don't get complacent and keep going on that waiver wire because there's still opportunity available in spots. There's still more guys that are going to go down. Unfortunately, that's the reality of the NFL we see every week, and just be prepared for when that happens that you have the guy that can step up into that, and that's all you got to do. You just got to keep going at that waiver wire at this point, especially if you have a lot of money left in FAB. Don't keep waiting. Like, this is the depth is not getting better on the waiver wire.
Yeah, and also one more guy I just want to recommend. Donovan Peoples-Jones with Odell.
DPJ.
DPJ, he's been okay in the absence of Odell. Baker somehow is better without Baker on the field. That we've seen that in his career. Peoples-Jones had 2 catches only, but 86 yards and a touchdown. He also had 4 for 101 and 2 touchdowns in week 6. So DPJ, I think without Odell, Jarvis Landry's going to siphon off those short area targets. But DPJ, I mean, a good deep threat. I think he's a flyer kind of option.
For sure. And I think that's going to do it for today. Colin, thank you very much again.
Thank you, Maddie. Love to have you on my podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We'll edit that out.
It's okay. We'll leave it at. You know what the listeners got to know? We don't edit things here.
No.
All right. Thank you guys for listening, if you are still listening. Signing off, I'm Maddie Wasserman, and we will see you next time on the Fantasy Finessers podcast.